Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Today's episode is sponsored by Yext Answers. If there's one thing this year has taught us, is that your website is your only pandemic-proof asset, but not if it's broken. You see, most websites have all the form, but lack a very critical function, search. There's either no way to search, or if there is, the experience is so bad that you can't even get answers to basic questions. If this sounds like your website, Yext Answers can help. Yext Answers offers a best-in-class search engine to your website so your customers can get an official answer to every question. That means more transactions and fewer expensive calls to customer service. You can try Yext Answers for free. Just go to yext.co.uk/eatsleep. That's Yext, yext.co.uk/eatsleep to learn more about how Yext Answers can help your website be your greatest asset. Hello, this is Eat Sleep Work Repeat. It's a podcast about making work better. I'm Bruce Aisley. Thank you for listening. I've had a fabulous response to last week's episode. Last week's episode was an interview with Chris Haywood, who was, I think, just gave such an incredible first-hand account of how he found himself going from what was, to a large extent, a dream career, and then finding himself through unforeseen circumstances, finding himself contemplating ending his life. And he'd got in touch with me, I think, to share his story. I think he's been overwhelmed with the response. He emailed me in the week saying just he was swept away with it. And I know he's not on Twitter, but I know that he was replying to a lot of people who were wishing him well on LinkedIn. I also know that inside the industry he's in, the advertising industry, there's an organisation called NABS, and I think he's offering to provide first-hand conversations to people who are affected with the same themes. So NABS, N-A-B-S, if you are affected by those themes and want to get in touch, I think Chris is doing that. So wonderful response. All of the themes that are covering the podcast are covered in the newsletter, and the best way you can get a hold of that is to go to the website, which is eatsleepworkrepeat.com, and I give you a regular update, normally on Tuesday evening or Wednesday evening occasionally, and I cover the themes that we're discussing today. Today's episode is much lighter in tone, but it's a really rare and intriguing opportunity to get a different perspective into a world of work that we often don't necessarily give a lot of consideration to. During the summer, someone at GCHQ got in touch with me and asked whether I'd be interested in getting an insight into the modern world of intelligence and spying. And I've been very fortunate that since I've been doing this podcast, I've been invited to MI5. I think I discuss it. I met a spy on a traffic island when I went to MI5. I've been to MI6 and I've been inside the SAS. So I was delighted to go inside GCHQ. GCHQ stands for Government Communication Headquarters. It's never known as that, really. It was created in 1919, just after the First World War, as a way to gather intelligence to support the government and to support the military. We're going to go through the objectives, the mission of GCHQ in my discussion here. But they were sort of done to, I guess, assist the fact that conflict and engagement with your adversaries around the world is no longer as linear as it used to be. And so having intelligence helps assist in that. I think it's an incredibly rare thing. I was allowed inside GCHQ and I got the opportunity to interview someone. And obviously the intelligence service historically was very secret. Increasingly, they're putting on a public face. And I was given the opportunity to talk to one of the few people inside GCHQ who's allowed to be named externally. So I met Joe Cavan. Joe's the Director for Strategy, Policy and Communications at GCHQ. GCHQ has always had a unique culture, harking back to its old site at Bletchley Park, where deliberately everyone worked in huts, so different teams didn't know what everyone else was working on to maintain secrecy. I think one of the reasons why they're intrigued in trying to show more of what they're doing is that they're on an intense program of recruitment and trying to build more diversity into the organization. The history of GCHQ has actually been quite a diverse organization. The Codebreakers, who worked at Bletchley Park originally in the Second World War, were credited with ending the Second World War 2 years early. And you may well know that the Codebreakers were very strongly sort of skewed towards women employees. And they've kept that spirit of diversity. I guess when a lot of us think of the intelligence service, you might immediately think of public school white men. And I think GCHQ are very focused on making sure that if that ever was to any extent their reputation, they're moving and trying to hire different people. So one of the ways that they're doing that is by getting out in podcasts like this and sharing their story in a compelling way with different audiences. Diversity is a big theme for them. They've got a large number of affinity networks, as you'd expect, into groups like people with disabilities and the LGBT community. But they're also very hot on neurodiversity. That's anything from mild dyslexia to autism. There's a big focus on that because there's a belief that those perceived weaknesses can actually be a strength when it comes to intelligence work. So like I say, very different theme today. What a unique opportunity to get inside and see in a time when a lot of us are trying to work out how our organisation can handle confidential material outside of the office. How can we deal with things that we regarded as essentially office bound before? I was really intrigued with how they would answer those questions. I think more than anything, you're going to discover it's just a very entertaining lesson. Joe Cavan, the director at GCHQ, I'm not really able to give much more of a biography of what she gives herself, so I'll let her introduce herself. But here's my interview when I went inside GCHQ. The interview today was recorded just before we went into the new lockdown. I'm thrilled to be here. I wonder if you could introduce yourself and say what you do.
Of course. Well, my name's Jo Cavan and I'm a director at GCHQ, which is the government communications headquarters. And we're one of the three intelligence agencies in the UK.
Now, it's an interesting thing. The Joshua met and the people along the way, most of them haven't been able to give me their second name. But you are. So what's the difference?
That's absolutely right. So a lot of the people that work for us still keep their identity secret. And that's really important. So there's actually only a small number of staff who are kind of publicly avowed, who can talk about themselves in a bit more detail and give their surnames.
So does that mean if I came to work here, I'd have to give up my Instagram account, my Twitter account? Am I allowed to have an internet identity as well as working here?
Well, you can have an internet identity. And you just do need to be a bit careful about your privacy settings and right. Just a bit mindful about, you know, how you use those accounts.
Right. Okay. How did you get a job here?
So I had quite a weird route in. So I kind of worked in the police for a bit, and then I worked as an engineer in forensic telecommunications, and then I worked for a watchdog where I actually oversaw the intelligence agencies okay. and police, so kind of watching the watchers, if you like. And then I came into GCHQ about 3 or 4 years ago. And I think the interesting thing for me is I've spent the last kind of 15 years telling my friends and family that I'm not a spy
right.
because they kind of thought I was. And so I've been kind of denying that for 15 years. And then all of a sudden I end up working at GCHQ. And,
right.
You know, So then I kind of am. And
hang on. So you tell yourself quietly when you're just on your own, you do look in the mirror and say, I'm a spy.
Well, you know, that's kind of how people see right. us generally. And, you know, as being, you know, our partners, MI5 and MI6.
I did a talk down at MI5 and I couldn't directly find where the place was because it wasn't specifically on the map, but the guy gave me a place to meet him. And I met him on a traffic island and he said, oh, thanks, you know, I came out. And I said, I was just delighted. A rendezvous with a spy on a traffic island, pretty much I've ticked off a life goal. And then one of his colleagues said, he's not a spy. And so I just wondered if there was sort of a hierarchy where you're allowed to call yourself a spy.
Oh, I think it really differs on the individual. But yeah, I think most of the public would see the intelligence agencies right. as being spies, even if some of our people don't identify with that themselves.
Explain to me what GCHQ does, because sort of it's this august title and, you know, how did it start? What does it do?
So GCHQ is a world-leading intelligence, cyber and security agency. So we started about 100 years ago. We actually had our 100th birthday last year. So just before World War One.
What were they doing in World War One? How can you do intelligence in World War One?
They were intercepting communications right. in a way that we still do today. And they were, you know, trying to break codes from our enemies right. and adversaries. And then through to kind of World War Two, where you will have probably heard about the work we did at Bletchley Park, breaking the German Enigma codes. So we've always had a big part to play in intercepting communications, code breaking, as well as kind of protecting government and military communications.
The job must be very different now, though, to even in the Bletchley Park days. I mean, like in the Bletchley Park days, you knew specifically who your enemy were because they sort of put up a banner saying, we're your enemy. But now the sort of the enemies must be far more diverse and not willing to reveal themselves.
Yeah, I mean, a lot has changed, you know, and we have evolved and kind of reimagined ourselves as an organization. If you think about the technology now, technology is in everyone's lives, the way that businesses work, etc. So it's still all about the technology, but the threats are changing and emerging and diversifying, as you've said. But still at our core, we're looking at nation state threats. We're looking at threats from terrorism. We're also helping to support serious crime operations, and the most public facing area of our work now is all to do with cybersecurity because right. of the kind of digital world that we live in. So it's about us actually advising citizens through our cyber aware campaign or advising businesses on how to stay safe online.
Right. How much of your resource would be in that? What percentage of the organization's focus on that?
So it's quite a large area of our business, and there are kind of really open elements of that, as well as the more secret elements. But yes, we're doing more and more work every day on kind of emerging technology threats. And we're finding that also the government's really looking to us on things like how to kind of use artificial intelligence and machine learning responsibly and ethically, how to kind of make best use of big data. So we're a big part of our role is being that technical authority and focusing on cybersecurity.
In the run-up to this, I chatted to one of your colleagues, Paul, and he sort of gave me a sense of how important legal governance is and staying within the confines of the law and sort of being compliant. And I just wonder, if we're up against like some adversaries who have just got like a bare-knuckle approach to just getting down and dirty and just doing as much harm as they can on us, are we just too nice to, are we creating an organization we're just too nice to beat the likes of the Russians, the Iranians, the Chinese, because we're going to do it all politely? The GRU aren't going to do it nicely, are they?
So, I mean, you're right in talking about how we take our power. You know, we're really serious about how we use our powers. You know, we have the most incredible powers and capabilities, and it's so important that we use those responsibly. That doesn't mean we're being nice, but that means we work within a kind of really clearly defined legal framework. And one of our key values as an organization is integrity, and that's all about making sure that we follow the rules, the rule of law, and the policies, and we make sure that we're acting ethically as an organisation. And I think actually that's what sets us apart from our adversaries.
Right. So it's like the Michelle Obama, they go low, we go high.
If you like.
Right, okay. Good PR answer. Okay, so, I mean, am I intrigued then? So how, if you've sort of got to recruit people like that, who'd you bring in to do a job like that? What does the profile look like? Let's start, actually. What does the profile of the organisation look like today?
So we need a range of individuals with, you know, a variety of different skills. So traditionally, people might have thought of GCHQ as being all about top mathematicians and, you know, computer scientists. And yes, please, we still want those people. So we're always looking to attract more mathematicians and computer scientists. But we also have a range of roles across in IT, in engineering. We have intelligence analysts. We have linguists. Our linguists can actually speak over 40 different languages between them. And also, like any other large organisation, we need good HR people, good finance people, good legal people.
But what do they look like today? Are they all men and white?
Well, no, they're not at all. I mean,
What percentage white is it?
Oh, gosh, I haven't got the figures off the top of my head. But, I mean, what I will talk about is that, you know, we really value diversity and diversity of thought in particular.
Right.
So we are quite...
God, that's the Matt Hancock line. But that's a get out of jail card, isn't it? That's when you haven't recruited any minorities. You say diversity of thought is the solution.
Well, no, I mean, I'll come on to ethnic minorities because, you know, it is a really important part of our strategy going forward, because we do need to recruit more individuals from ethnic minority backgrounds. And there's lots of things that we're doing to try and increase those numbers. We're also trying to do more to bring more women in technology roles, and also to make sure that we have more senior women in the organisation.
Right.
But actually, if you look at our history, we've always really valued diversity. And if you look at some of the kind of wicked...
In what sense?
Well, if you look at some of the wicked problems and challenges that we have to solve, we've always known and understood that if you bring a mix of minds and different perspectives those problems and challenges,
example.
You can solve them. I mean, I can't talk about anything we're doing today, obviously, and the kind of top secret stuff. But if you think just back to what we were talking about earlier in Bletchley Park, and some of the code breaking, you know, 90% of the people that worked at Bletchley Park were actually women.
Right.
So we've always valued that diversity and those different mindsets. We've got quite a large number of neurodiverse individuals in the organisation, because some of the skills that neurodiverse individuals have are absolutely crucial to our
missions.
So
specifically, what do you mean, and how do you recruit them?
We've got great networks in the organisation. We've looked at our recruitment processes to make sure that we can attract those individuals and pull them through all parts of the process, and made adjustments to help them with the process. And we kind of share stories on our website and Instagram accounts, etc. But what we find is that people who want to solve problems, who can see patterns and make links and connections, is just a really crucial part of us being successful in our mission.
Right, but go on, the neurodiversity, autistic people?
People who are autistic, people who are dyslexic or dyspraxic.
Right.
If you actually look at our apprenticeship schemes that we run, our apprentices are 3 to 4 times more likely to be neurodiverse than other apprenticeship schemes.
Job must be very difficult now, because you've got this range of different adversaries, and, you know, internally, externally, sort of anywhere there's a computer connection, right? So it's sort of immensely complex. And so I guess, you know, different languages is a bigger need probably than ever before, or a range of languages. How do you set about trying to recruit into different communities? How do you recruit into Polish British people, or, you know, Asian British people? How do you recruit into those places?
So it's about outreaching to those communities. We do a lot of work with social enterprise organisations. We do...
What do you mean, though? I want specifics,
really. So we work with schools, for example.
Okay.
We run courses. If you look at our Manchester office, which we've recently opened, we're doing a lot of outreach with schools and the universities there.
I don't get why, for the Manchester office, in one of the articles about it, it says it's run by Simon. And you don't think this sort of shroud of secrecy makes it feel undemocratic? Shouldn't organisations be public? Shouldn't we have the sense? So the thing about Simon is that Simon wasn't given a second name, but it feels undemocratic to me. It feels like the Stasi to me, that, you know, we're not allowed to have these full identities of individuals. What's the reasoning behind that? If we're a democratic state, why can't I know who Simon is?
So I suppose I would say, you know, really on that, it's about protecting the identity of some of our staff who have done operational roles in the past or who might do operational roles in the future. Right. So we're always cognizant to make sure, A, the people that we put out there publicly and avow are comfortable with that themselves, and they're not likely to go and do kind of covert or secret type work in the future.
Edward Snowden said that GCHQ ran a mass process of surveillance. Has someone read my emails?
So I doubt very much that anyone has been reading your emails, Bruce. So I think, you know, the Edward Snowden revelations were, you know, an interesting time for the organisation. And we've had a number of kind of litigation since then, which has really shown that, you know, at all times GCHQ operated in accordance with the law, but the laws were outdated and they needed, you know, with the amount of technology change.
The law got more lenient afterwards, didn't it?
The law needed to be updated. So we've very recently had new laws that govern our powers, which have much more stringent safeguards and processes, particularly around the use of bulk data. And we were already on a transparency and openness journey ourselves, because it's really important for us that the public, A, understand what we do, because we're here to serve the public and to justify their trust. And that's really important for our license to operate as an organisation.
Right.
But it's also really important for us so that we can attract the next generation of brilliant recruits to come and work with us.
How do you find those people? Like, you know, that hacker who got done in America and was on a charge, he seems like the sort of person I'd want to... Do you know that guy who was sort of... He was done for some historical association with ransomware and he was charged? He seems like the sort of person you should be recruiting. Are you going... You know, I want us to be hiring some badass hackers. How are we going to get these badass hackers in?
So one of the great things about working for our organisation is that you can hack lawfully, you know, in line with the laws that govern our work. So, you know, we do recruit a lot of hackers. We call it computer network exploitation. Not hacking, but yeah, absolutely, people with those skills.
Okay, that's interesting. Okay, but that would only be one of the many skills that you need to bring in.
Yeah.
If I meet someone who works at GCHQ, what will they tell me they do for a living? The reason why I ask you is that someone once told me that if someone works for MI6, then if someone asks them, they'll say they work at the Foreign Office. And I met a bloke at a party and I said, "What do you do?" And he said, "I work at the Foreign Office." And I said, "Ah, MI6. And he was a bit confused and dumbfounded by it. If I meet someone who works at GCHQ, what are they going to tell me they do for a living?
So it really depends on what their role is. So as you know, in our National Cybersecurity Centre, that's all about reaching out to industry and directly to the citizen, providing advice and guidance on cybersecurity. So those people are out every day, you know, talking to organisations and companies. So, you know, will generally be able to be more open about what they're doing.
Right.
Whereas other individuals who work for us might not feel comfortable with that or able to do that. But, you know, at our heart, we are civil servants.
Right. The one of the things that you always see sort of as the intelligence service is trying to go through this transition of being a bit more outwardly focused is that you occasionally see these ads that are either out in social media or they're out in newspapers, which are like little puzzles to solve and things like that. But that must attract a certain profile of candidate. You know, there must be, how can I just, you know, those people you looked over in the old days and they were doing a Sudoku on the train, doing the Times crossword. Like, there's a certain profile of people doing that. Is that your experience, that certain ads attract certain people?
I mean, we're always looking and how we can kind of target our campaigns to the types of individuals that we're interested in recruiting. That was part of the reason we opened our Twitter account, and we more recently opened our account on Instagram, because we were looking to reach out to more, young women, and Instagram's a really good tool for that. So people get to know about us, get involved in some of our kind of competitions or puzzles, and then might apply online for some of our roles or join some of our summer schools, which we were doing virtually this year due to COVID. So we're always looking to attract the best talent and test new ways of reaching different audiences.
And one of the challenges that we've all had this year is like the lockdown has sort of been this strange disruption to work. And most definitely, you know, one of the things that a lot of businesses have empathised with is that, do we allow private information to go into people's households? Because that was, whether it's call centres or whether it's... And that must be a challenge for you. How do you manage... What lessons can other companies learn from you? How do you manage the protection of secret information? Because every laptop must be a potential security risk, right? How do you manage the security of information when people might not be on site all the time now?
Yeah, so I mean, it's a really good question. And like other businesses, you know, we were kind of challenged overnight when the lockdown measures came in March. So I suppose the first thing to say is that we're key workers here at GCHQ. And, you know, there is top secret work that we do, which we couldn't do from home and which needs to still be done in one of our offices. So, you know, from the start, we made sure we had enough staff in our offices in a kind of safe environment and COVID secure environment, if you like, to enable them to continue our critical missions, whether we're working on life at immediate risk.
Looking at my emails.
Whether we're working on, not looking at your emails, Bruce, but thank you for that. whether we're working on protecting our military colleagues who are out in theatre. So that all of that critical work and mission needed to continue.
Right.
We are a more dispersed workforce now than we were before. We do have some of our people working at home. And it's really important that we give them the right security advice and guidance around how they handle material. But it is a lower classification.
Right.
One of the reasons we launched our cyber aware campaign at the start of the pandemic, we actually brought the launch of that forward, that campaign. You can go and read about that. There's some really great tips for members of the public as to how they stay safe online.
Well, how would you describe the culture here? I mean, it seems like an incredible sort of purpose-driven job where... You know, well, it seems immensely appealing from the outside. How would you describe the culture?
So I would say you're absolutely right. We have a strong sense of purpose, and it's all about keeping the country safe. And that really connects our people, and people have a real kind of sense of community spirit around that shared mission. And I'd also say that, you know, everyone kind of wants to contribute to something bigger and wants to feel part of, you know, helping to keep the country safe. And we're a really values-driven organisation. So we've got some core values around integrity. And we've talked a bit before about how our lawful framework and our ethics. We've talked a bit about kind of teamwork. So, you know, we're really good at kind of teamwork and collaborating and innovating together. And our other values are all about ingenuity, because we've always been renowned for our ingenuity and innovation. And then it's all about the mission in terms of what we've talked about, the sense of purpose and impact.
Must be quite exciting to be sort of trading in secrets. Has there ever been a secret that you've found out and you've gasped?
I think I am surprised every day and excited by my job.
Gosh, what's the best secret you know?
Nice try.
Give us a clue. Okay, that's interesting. So it sounds like, and so the vast majority of people, they're not based in Cheltenham, or is there a mix?
Cheltenham and Manchester.
Right.
But we've got a number of other locations in the UK and around the world.
Do you hire people at different ages? Is it like, so, you know, I guess one of the things about diversity is that, you know, it's not just all of the sort of the instant things you reach for, but I guess age diversity in the people you're hiring as well.
Absolutely. Really, really important.
Right.
And we've always had fantastic apprenticeship schemes, really good schemes to bring in students from university. But more and more, we're wanting to hire people, you know, mid-career. I came in myself in the middle of my career, and I know your podcast is listened to by a lot of kind of mid-career folk. So we're always on the lookout for different skills and experience and knowledge that people can bring, so we get that kind of mix of minds and perspectives.
When you look at it, do you anticipate, is it just constant change in a job like this, in the sense that, you know, the constant threats, the constant things that you're on the lookout for? It's almost like the threat in 5 years will be something that we've not heard of now. Is that just baked into the fabric of the job and the organisation?
Absolutely. I mean, we've always prided ourselves on kind of being at the forefront of technology and reimagining kind of our future, because we have had to change and adapt. And that's a big part of who we are as an organisation and one of our strengths.
Because how does it sit on things like that? Well, you've got, like QAnon, I'll give you one big example, because there's someone on my timeline who shares some QAnon stuff, and it's really cleverly disguised QAnon. But if you sort of, if you unpick it, QAnon is created by a crackpot, and it's sort of pretty clear crackpot, weaponized by the Russian GRU to an extent that will become clear, I think, after the US election. But when you look at that, I mean, that's, how do you even begin to try to, firstly, control it, respond to it, interpret it? That seems like one of the threats that, you know, like you only need to search some of the QAnon hashtags. And but it's just like, how do you even begin to respond to what is an unpredictable and unexpected threat?
And that's why we need brilliant people working for us. And we've got to get ahead of the curve on some of these emerging and new technologies. And we've always managed to do that. And we've always been kind of quite understated. And a lot of things that maybe we've invented ourselves and then have been kind of publicly invented years later, because we haven't been able to kind of talk about those. But we're always building new capabilities. And really, although technology is such an important part of our organisation, it's actually the people. The people are the real heart of our organisation, because without them, we wouldn't be able to design and build the most amazing capabilities and partnerships.
More with my discussion on GCHQ after this. Today's episode is sponsored by Yext Answers. Does your website help people buy or make them bounce? When someone searches and can't find the right answer they need, they bounce all right, usually over to a search engine that starts with a G. But over there, they get bombarded with ads, not the answers they need. The customer loses, your business loses. There has to be a better way. With Yext Answers, there is. Yext Answers offers a powerful search engine to your website so your customers get an official answer to every question. And that means they're more likely to buy. You can now try Yext Answers for free. Just go to yext.co.uk/eatsleep. That's Yext, Y-E-X-T, .co.uk/eatsleep. Start giving your customers answers, not ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Now back to my discussion with Joe Cavan, the director at GCHQ.
I'm very intrigued. How long after me joining would I find out a really good secret?
I should think on day one.
Oh, Bruce. Come on!
Because you would have had to go through all the vetting and recruitment processes, so you'd be ready to go on day one.
Right. But I wonder if you could give me sort of a sense of the scope of Q control, what you actually cover, what is the mandate, what's the brief for the organisation?
So we've got five key missions in GCHQ. So the first mission is counter-terrorism. So that's all about disrupting threats, terrorist plots. We've got a cybersecurity mission, which is all about helping the UK to be the safest place to live and do business online. We have a serious crime mission, which is all about protecting the UK and our citizens from serious crime threats. We provide support to defence and our military colleagues in theatre and with war fighting. And our final mission, strategic advantage, is all about looking at threats from hostile states.
And has COVID changed the way that we look at any of those things? Or has it been a sort of disruption to the way that the organisation thinks?
So it's a really good question. So in terms of our mission, we're constantly evolving, and we've definitely been doing more work on health security as a result of COVID. And you might have heard it called biosecurity.
Okay, what's this?
So we've been doing work to support the NHS to make sure we're able to protect them from cyber attacks at this time.
Is someone trying to steal vaccine or stuff? What is it?
We've been helping to protect the critical health sector and research sector from those types of attacks. And we've been helping to make sure the NHS app, the track and trace app, is cyber secure.
Okay.
So a whole range of different pieces of work that we've been doing in relation to bio and health security.
Right. Okay. So I guess, and like, you know, they're good examples of things that at the start of this year, you wouldn't have even known that that was in your plan.
Absolutely. I don't think we envisaged we'd be spending so much time on some of these areas.
Do you think the world in this regard is, does it have more threats now than it did? I mean, that's my sense now, that, you know, state actors, and it seems like there's more of these threats than ever before. That's my perception, but maybe that's just a recency bias.
So the threats are diversifying, and if you look at, you know, us as an organization 100 years ago, we had a much narrower mission than today's mission. So definitely the threats are diversifying and evolving. As the world is kind of more digital, it's more relevant and important for us to be helping to secure that digital infrastructure to keep the UK safe.
Do you ever think just close down the internet? I mean, how much easier would the job be?
That would be a bit of a drastic measure. I think we all like to use the internet as well.
BBC One, BBC Two, a couple of other channels, that's your lot.
Back to the good old days.
Yeah.
I'm not so sure.
Okay, it's just an idea. Blue skying it. Fabulous. If someone is interested, where would you even start to think about, like, looking at GCHQ as like a place to come and work?
So we've got a website, so you can visit our website, and we advertise our jobs. So, you know, it's not like the old days where you might get a tap on the shoulder and a secret whisper to come and join us. We run open job recruitment, and we have, you know, lots of outreach in schools and universities. So it's really easy to get in touch with us today.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. It's a fascinating chat. I'm very envious about all these secrets that you know.
My pleasure.
Thank you,
Jo.
Thanks. Thank you.
Thank you to my contact who set that interview up. What a brilliant and unique insight. I loved that. And it was obviously a fun interview as well. Very entertaining in places. If you did like this, thank you for listening. Really appreciate your company today. I've been Bruce Daisley. See you next time.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
ACAST powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Megan Rinks.
And I'm Melissa D. Montz.
And like every other person with access to a microphone, we started a podcast.
On Mondays, we release Don't Blame Me, which is an advice podcast where listeners call in and we share our thoughts on situations such as what to do if you're going to your boyfriend's family function and you haven't told him that you previously slept with both his twin brothers.
Then on Thursdays, we release our podcast, But Am I Wrong?, where we ethically gossip about pop culture, politics, our lives, and your lives. Listeners write in and we tell them if they're wrong or right in a situation. Are you the hero or the villain?
On Tuesdays and Fridays, we throw in a little something extra as well.
A little something, something. We strive to create a community grounded in activism, mental health, and inclusivity. Think of us as like your blunt, honest friends who give you advice that you need to hear, not what you want to hear. But we're also always rooting for your success. What we lack in credentials, we make up for in
opinions.
We do that in every episode too.
We're professional unprofessional, so if you're looking for a new slate of podcasts to add to your routine, we're here for you.
Acast recommends.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.